This podcast is part of a special series on science policy and commentary from Science Magazine.
Can we prevent human conflict? During his long and varied career, Dr. David Hamburg was president of the Carnegie Corporation of New York, the National Academy of Sciences, and AAAS, and was a member of the United States Defense Policy Board and the Carnegie Commission on Preventing Deadly Conflict. His editorial, Preventing Mass Violence, appears in this week's special issue. In your editorial, you mentioned that today the capacity for incitement of hatred and violence is more powerful than ever before. Why do you think that is?
Technology. There's a very good side to the internet and there's a dark side to the internet. You can learn a tremendous amount of education. It's wonderful. Same time, a tremendous amount of hatred. The management of diversity soon emerges as a huge problem when you see how diversity can be misused to build on the old bad habit of distinguishing between in-groups and out-groups. And so the out-groups can easily be rated and degraded nowadays in a way that reached millions of people. And I found when I looked into it that every modern genocide, and there have been plenty of them, has been preceded by severe hateful propaganda. So it is possible. We don't have to, but we have the technological capacity to spread hatred and foment violence very readily to millions of people all over the world.
Is it not true that we have far more tools and far more international cooperation than we ever have? To what extent does our perhaps better understanding of cooperation offset are more sophisticated?
Well, I've devoted most of my life to working on that. You can't make any optimistic statements that we're in great shape on it. We're not. We've mostly flubbed prevention. Cooperation has been very, very sporadic. Look what kind of non-cooperation we're getting in Syria at the present time. People slaughtering each other. So we don't have a great track record on it. But the difference is, and this comes out in a number of studies, that there are a lot more people working on these things from the point of view of prevention. So yes, there are good things happening, I'd say, but we still have a long way to go. And we have to strive. We have to stimulate people all over the world, especially in the scientific community, to get better ideas.
In your vast experience, what policy interventions would you say work the best?
Early prevention. I believe every established democracy should have a unit in it which is interdisciplinary and international, and which brings together the scientists and policymakers so that you can see the early warning, there's beginning to be trouble, hate speech, and you do something about it. Preventive diplomacy. You try to work out some joint solution, some problem solving, some new way of formulating the problem so that both sides can benefit.
You know, you mentioned some very interesting stories. Could you share some stories with us, some particularly interesting
anecdotes?
Yes,
certainly. Some of my students were taken hostage in a political struggle in Africa in 1975. We were very interested in research on chimpanzees because they share about 98% of our genes, and we were studying that when five of my students were taken hostage by people who were caught up in a conflict involved Congo and Tanzania. And it took the better part of 3 months before, with a lot of luck, I was able to get them freed. It was a very traumatic experience for all of us. That particular experience changed my life because in dealing with these people, I was exposed in the most vivid way. I had my face rubbed in the worst problems of the world, of hostility and violence and hunger and all of the dreadful things in poor developing countries. And I could see that was a lot of their incentive to try to overthrow the dictator who was oppressing them. Nevertheless, I couldn't approve of their doing that by violating the human rights of my students or anybody's human rights. But there was no mechanism at that time in 1975 for the world to intervene to solve that problem or other problems like it.
Where do you see things going now?
Fundamentally, what it adds up to is human beings all over the world learning to live together. It's not at all inconceivable that this fundamental concept of learning to live together in peace and prosperity can be achieved. My main desire is to get the scientific community more and more involved in doing research on these things, both experimental research and field research, and then the interaction between the scientific community and the policy community, so people who have great power can learn what the evidence is. Some people say Washington is an evidence-free zone, but I don't believe that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Read David Hamburg's editorial in Science This Week. I'm Meghna Sachdev. On behalf of Science Magazine and our publishers, AAAS, thank you for joining us.
You've been listening to a policy podcast, part of a series on science policy and commentary from Science Magazine. The full Science podcast is released Thursdays at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.